From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Saeed Erekat, Washington correspondent and political analyst for the Jerusalem-based Al-Quds Daily Newspaper, VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, and our moderator Thomas DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. After months of anticipation by official Washington, special counsel Robert Mueller has finally testified before congressional investigators looking into alleged wrongdoing by candidate Donald Trump and his allies. Despite the intensive buildup, however, the Mueller hearings ended not with a bang, but more of a muddle. Supporters and opponents of the president both heard testimony that gave them cheer, but in the scandal parlance of political Washington, there was no smoking gun delivered by Mr. Mueller in his 6 hours of congressional testimony. Except for the Russians, perhaps, Mueller said Moscow systematically infiltrated and interfered with the 2016 U.S. election on behalf of then-candidate Trump, quote, and have geared up to do it again, quote, in 2020. Democrats nevertheless vowed to press ahead with multiple investigations of the president and his administration. The United Kingdom has a new prime minister. As expected, he is Boris Johnson, an unconventional politician and former journalist known for his wacky personal style, sharp tongue, and his insistence that Great Britain can reach a deal to leave the European Union with a deal before an October 31st deadline. People who bet against Britain are going to lose their shirts, Mr. Johnson predicted after forming a new government. Back in the United States, a federal judge has blocked the Trump administration, at least temporarily, from enforcing a new policy that disqualifies a significant proportion of mostly Central American asylum seekers who reach the U.S. border with Mexico. The decision is certain to be appealed by the Trump administration. Well, Catherine, you were at the hearings a few days ago when former FBI director and special counsel Robert Mueller finally delivered congressional testimony. Now, he didn't want to appear before Congress. He said when he issued his report in April, a 448-page report, that his testimony is his report. And he was reluctant. He didn't want to testify before Congress. He was issued a subpoena, and at that point, he had to testify. Tell us about your thoughts about how it went. Tell us about what they used to call at a place I work for, the psychic surround. What was it like up there? Was it
the atmosphere, the circus atmosphere?
Right.
You know, we have had so many blockbuster hearings on Capitol Hill during this Trump administration, so many moments that people thought would be turning points in terms of the Trump administration. And I think House Democrats really wanted to see that moment happen this past week, but they didn't get that TV moment. And a lot of that was due in part to what you mentioned, which was the special counsel's body language, his demeanor in terms of going up to Capitol Hill, really against his will. He did not want to do this. He kept saying that all the answers are in that 448-page report. Democrats really wanted to get that TV moment from him, to get him to read out some sections of the report. They felt that having a special counsel do that would create a TV moment that would resonate with the American people. Mueller was not having any of that. He stuck to yes and no answers in those questions.
Yeah, there were a lot of yes, no, correct, true,
right,
not true.
I refer you to the report.
Right. He knew what he was doing, or I should say he knew what he was not doing and not going to do. I mean, I think what the Democrats wanted more than anything else was they wanted a soundbite in which he answered this question. Mr. Mueller, you've said that you could not indict a president based on legal opinions by the Justice Department. If you could have indicted President Trump for obstruction of justice, would you have? He didn't answer that question. That, I think, was what they wanted more than anything. Saeed, I got the feeling that the Democrats did not do their market research very well. And by that, I mean they didn't realize how reticent Mr. Mueller was, how he was not going to engage in politics and give them the kind of the moment
For sure, he was reticent. He was a reluctant witness. You know, it came across almost throughout the whole testimony. His body language, and in fact, the real language, indicated that he was there, you know, in a way against his will and didn't really have much to say. And in fact, at times, it appeared as if he did not read his own report. You know, he missed some points. So maybe in retrospect, that the Democrats, not only did they not go well-prepared to do this hearing, but probably it will come back to impact them negatively, I think. You know, I mean, certainly some people will push forward for this thing, looking for fishing, and I don't want to use words that were used by the administration, but fishing for areas where the president is vulnerable and go after him that way. But I think they are going to end up with the whimper that you talked about. It's not, you know, not a bang. You know, the sound point that you mentioned was just not there.
President Trump called the hearings a very good day for him, and it shouldn't surprise anybody to know that the president pronounced himself totally exonerated. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. What do you think about that, Catherine? How did he fare? I guess I should say Mueller had a few unpleasant words about the president and his supporters. He said, for example, the president may have committed obstruction of justice by ordering aides to fire Mr. Mueller, then trying to cover up evidence that he had done that. So, and I think Mr. Mueller said pointedly that the report did not exonerate the president, but of course it did not indict him either. So how do you think the president came out of that?
Correct. And, you know, I think one of the more interesting moments out of that House Judiciary hearing, the first hearing of the day of Mueller's testimony, actually came during a question from a House Republican from Colorado who had a little bit of a backfire when he asked Mr. Mueller about whether or not the president could be indicted. And Mueller mentioned that the president most certainly can be indicted after he leaves office. And that actually created one of the TV moments that House Democrats were looking for in this hearing. But it came from a House Republican. I can also say that in interviewing some of the president's major supporters on Capitol Hill after that first hearing, they came out of it with a clear party line. The party line was that Mueller was intellectually disheveled, that he was confused, that he clearly hadn't read his own report, or at least that's what they claimed. And I think that's the line that we're going to be hearing now as Congress goes out of session until September. That gives Republicans some really good talking points when they go back to their home districts and they talk to people about what's happening with the president and what's happening with this impeachment discussion.
Well, I get the feeling that this whole process is now frozen. The House of Representatives is now out for almost 7 weeks.
Right.
And they don't come back until the second week in September. I think the Senate will join them very shortly. So I think there's not really a vehicle. And some Democrats say, well, we'll be home among our constituents and they'll tell us what they think about this. I'm not sure that I buy that. There's about a 60% of the American people, judging from the polls, they're opposed to beginning a process of impeachment right now. After all, the votes might be in the House to impeach the president, but there's no way a Senate dominated by Republicans will convict him and throw him out of office. So I get the feeling that most Americans say, why bother if it can't happen?
Well, I don't think the votes are there. I mean, but that's my own reading of, you know, the map of the House of Representatives, even among Democrats. We see how reluctant the Speaker of the House is, you know, the leader of the Democratic Party. We saw out of this hearing that the Republicans really have become Trump's party. I mean, all these Republicans on Capitol Hill, they just lined up behind him. They were loyal to him. They're not going to change anytime soon. As you said, in the Senate, you know, it'll never make it in the Senate. One thing that the Democrats missed, and that's because Mueller is really a special counsel and not an independent counsel, not like Kenneth Starr. They could not do a face-to-face interview with the president where they may have asked him tough questions. So I don't know if it will ever make it to impeachment, although maybe a majority in the country may want that or may not. I don't know. It's a difficult process. It will definitely not make it through the Senate.
It struck me that nothing I heard moved the needle.
Nothing.
I mean, we already knew that Mueller's report listed 10 instances of presidential conduct that could be considered possible obstruction of justice. We knew that. Mm. And I didn't see much, if any, new information. So I guess my feeling is that if you love President Trump, you didn't hear anything likely to dissuade you. And if you loathe President Trump, the same was true. I mean, I think that's a testament to the polarization of the American body politic at the moment. But that, I think that's the reality. But I do want to go to one thing, Catherine, that Mueller was very decisive about, and that was Russian meddling in the 2016 election. And that was the one point where he showed some real passion, that the Russians are up to it. They're still at it. And I think at one point he said they're doing it even as we sit here today. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we saw a very intense shift in demeanor from the special counsel from the morning hearing with House Judiciary, which was much more focused on the president's possible crimes and whether he had violated anything. So the House Intelligence Committee in the afternoon, when we shifted to that, you could tell that the special counsel was much more outgoing in terms of talking about his concerns there and mentioned very blatantly that Russians are interfering right now as we're going into this 2020 presidential election cycle. What was really marked from the House Republicans on that panel was that they didn't ask a lot of in-depth questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about this. Take a step back from all of the political circus here in Washington. We have a foreign power interfering in an election. That should be of concern to every lawmaker in this country, regardless of their party. And because we're so wrapped up in this partisan political infighting, they're not worried about it. Mm-hmm. None of that came out in the hallways afterwards.
Syed, why is that? I guess it speaks for itself that the president has not shown a lot of interest in doing something that would irritate Vladimir Putin by going hard on this. On the other hand, there are reports that American cyber warfare against the Russians, counter cyber warfare, is increasing.
Yes.
Of course, we don't know a lot about that, and we probably shouldn't.
Well, I think, like Catherine said, it's party line. I mean, the Republicans are 100% behind the president. We've seen a shift. I mean, you know, look at the major leaders like Lindsey Graham and others and Mitch McConnell and in the House. I mean, they really are lining behind him. And it used to be the Republicans that were so anti-Russian, anti-Soviet in the old days. Now it's the other way around. And I think, honestly, the Democrats are hanging on to this Russia thing for dear life. I mean, there was something there, but not a great deal. The public is exposed to actual, you know, point by point or in terms of level of interference of Russia. The public is not going to really line behind it and so on. So I think that one is a party line, and second, there's been no, beyond rhetoric, there's been no evidence of how much the Russians have intervened.
We'll be back to our discussion in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. And check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now, back to our panel, Syed Erekat, Washington correspondent and political analyst for the Jerusalem-based Al-Quds Daily Newspaper, VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson, and moderator Thomas DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal.
We now have a new British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Controversial, to put it mildly. President Trump has called him a different kind of guy. But then President Trump says, well, some people say I'm a different kind of guy as well. So maybe they'll get along. Catherine, how do you think the ascension of Mr. Johnson, who has been praised by President Trump, will affect the special relationship with these two leaders going into a very difficult situation, namely the Brexit, the British exit from the European Union?
Right. This endless Brexit problem that we've been going through. I think that the ascension of Boris Johnson, you know, as we saw greeted by President Trump on Twitter, will actually help the special relationship, which we know has not been in a great position these past few months with President Trump and Theresa May. We have similar political styles with these two leaders. I think it really speaks to a shift in the way leaders are leading their countries these days. You know, it's a very much more informal style on social media, you know, shoot from the hip. I talked to, you know, voters around the country who love President Trump's approach. They like that he speaks his own mind. We may be seeing the same thing from Boris Johnson here.
Could well be. There's one big difference. The president won the election narrowly, but he won. No question about it. And Boris Johnson's election as British Prime Minister was ratified by approximately 1.6% of the British people, because he was appointed by the Conservative Party. It was not a referendum or a plebiscite like the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And because of that, he's very controversial, not particularly popular. So we will have to see. I do agree with Catherine that I think Johnson and Trump will get along, notwithstanding the fact that Johnson in the past has said not very nice things about President Trump, but that was then.
Right.
Now they I think they are like-minded. President Trump, he went out of his way to say nice things about Johnson before he became prime minister. I suspect you'll see a state visit from Johnson to the United States before too long to make the point that the relationship now can be special again. But the bottom line is obvious. Johnson says he's pulling the United Kingdom out of Brexit on October 31st. Deal or no deal. Theresa May tried to get the British Parliament to support a Brexit deal for months and failed three times. So why should we believe that Boris Johnson will do better than Mrs. May?
I'm not so sure he will do better than Mrs. May, especially on Brexit. I mean, she definitely tried all she could a number of times over and over and over again, and she failed. Because simply, you know, to extract oneself, or for Britain to extract itself from the European Union is not an easy thing. I mean, there's an integration of the economy, and not only the economy, but, you know, in terms of travel, in terms of people moving about in Europe and so on. So it transcends many, many things. Boris Johnson, in many ways, just to go back to what you said about him, he's very similar to Trump. They call him Britain's Trump. He's audacious, he's pompous, he's full of himself, so on. He alienates people. He always attacks. He's always attacking European leaders and so on. You know, and he wanted to be the King of England, maybe, you know, in the old days. You can go back to his history. He's been that way. But, you know, he's also smart and astute, and he does have a lot of support. He's got friends in high places in Washington. He has Frank Luntz and so on. He's got, obviously, a friend in the White House. It is alleged that he was behind the leak, you know, about the British ambassador Kim a few weeks back to help himself and knock down his opponent, Hunt. So I think what we are likely to see, two things, Tom. He will not be able to do a deal with the Europeans by October 31st. Now, he says, we're pulling out, you know, we're enacting Brexit, come what may, with a deal or without a deal.
Do or die.
Hoping that the U.S. And the Trump administration will make up for whatever trade issues with England.
Well, this is music to President Trump's ears, because, as we all know, in Washington, he does not like multilateral arrangements. He likes bilateral relationships. So he doesn't want to have a deal with the EU, just like he's dubious of NATO. He wants a trade deal between the UK and the US. And so I think the president would probably not be all that upset if Johnson doesn't get his way here. But the question is, Johnson knows it will be a real political embarrassment for him if he cannot, in the next 3 months or so, get a deal. He has asked the European Union to renegotiate. Is that possible? Is that likely?
Well, I'm sure the European Union would like to keep Britain, you know, or to maintain some sort of, you know, trade policies and so on, because they are too integrated with one another. I think everything that could possibly be negotiated already have. I mean, we've seen Theresa May do this, you know, for 3 years. She tried to do that and failed. So how flexible the Europeans are, or how fed up they are with England and Brexit and so on, we don't know. The point is that Brexit was voted on in an emotional moment without really much delving into its ramification, its impact on Europe's economy, Europe's politics. So it will continue to hit the brick wall.
It's hard to see how this works out quickly. Maybe the European Union will say at some point the British are negotiating in good faith. There's a new prime minister, so they deserve a little more time. But they don't like Mr. Johnson. A lot of people don't like Mr. Johnson. He's got a lot of enemies within the United Kingdom. I think it's entirely possible that this will be one of the shorter-lived governments in the United Kingdom, that Mr. Johnson, having grabbed the brass ring, may not be able to hang on to it very long, but we will see. But you're right, Saeed. I mean, a breakaway from the European Union was voted by a national referendum.
Right.
And it was a narrow victory for Brexit, but Brexit won. And so it's going to be a little hard to say, let's have another vote and invalidate the will of the people. There are a lot of moving parts here, but it'll be interesting to see how it sorts out.
For sure. It's like the dog catching the car. I mean, what do you do with it afterward? They did not really prepare for this referendum. People had second thoughts. They were, you know, sort of a bit sorry, you know, that they voted for this thing, not knowing what the future holds and so on. And we've seen, you know, that over the last 3 years, it's been basically frozen. I mean, there has been no movement. And like you said, I mean, he's not well-liked in Europe. Definitely Merkel does not like him, and she's now really the real leader of Europe and so on, for the French president. So he is going to have a very difficult time. I agree with you. I don't think he's going to last long, but one never knows.
One never knows. As I've said many times from these microphones, overnight is a lifetime in politics.
Right.
And
that's
we have
true.
Hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes between the next U.S. election and between the next U.K. election. We will just have to see. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I'd like to return to the issue that never quite goes away in the United States, and that is immigration. We'll be talking about this all the way to November 2020, I think. But the last several days, a federal judge has told the Trump administration, you cannot implement a new plan that the administration just decided to implement unilaterally on the border. And the new plan was that if you, as a refugee seeking asylum in the United States, if you have gone somewhere else before you get to the U.S. border, you're not eligible for asylum. The federal right. judge from the Northern District of California, it's fair to say, liberal legal mm-hmm. jurisdiction, has said this is unconstitutional. He has ruled it's unconstitutional, and the judge said there's nothing in the Constitution or nothing in law that says that if you've stopped somewhere else, you're ineligible for asylum. As a matter of fact, American law says that if you reach the American border and ask for asylum, you are entitled to at least a hearing. You're not entitled to asylum, but you're entitled to some due process. And, of course, the Trump administration is really backed up. They've got a huge caseload, an overload, and they have been deporting in recent months far fewer illegal immigrants than the Obama administration
right.
did, and that is an extremely sore subject to President Trump, understandably. So they're trying to figure out a way to speed it up. What happens next here? I assume there will be an appeal.
Yes. Well, we have seen that Judge John Tiger, I believe, of the Northern District of California, saying, look, there is no way for us to know or there's to guarantee that these returnees, if you send them back, let's say, to Mexico, that they will not be harmed and so on. And as you said, he's basically saying, what we want is to implement the policy that has been in place for many, many years. Now, I've been in this country for a very, very long time, and ever since I came, there's been a chronic immigration problem. Band-aid effort will not resolve this issue. So we're going back to where we were. You know, people that make it to the U.S. border, they should be case-by-case basis, either granted asylum and so on, or you can't push them back, you can't separate families, you can't do all these things. Now, we've seen in Washington, just before that, I think there was a ruling by a judge here in Washington that the Trump administration liked, which says that the administration has every right to do what it did, you know. So there is a great deal of conflict, you know, there's a judicial conflict on this issue, but for now, the ruling of Judge Tiger stands.
That's for now, of course.
I think
this ruling will be appealed, but not quickly,
right.
but it will be appealed, and I suspect, like many of these immigration issues, it will be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, because the Trump administration believes it has a sympathetic conservative majority on the Supreme Court. They might be overstating that, but on the other hand, there is a conservative majority on many issues for the first time. So I think we'll see more litigation, hundreds of thousands of people on the Mexican border trying to reach this country and seek asylum. Immigration is not going away. It is a core issue for President Trump's reelection campaign. It is a core issue for many of his most fervent supporters, and he is not going to stop talking about this. We will hear more about this in the months leading up to the next election. That's all the time we have for now. Thanks to Kathleen Gibson of the Voice of America, congressional correspondent, and Saeed Erekat, Washington correspondent and political analyst for the Jerusalem-based Al-Quds Daily Newspaper. I'm your moderator, Tom DeFrank of the National Journal. Thank you for listening.